that it is an embarrassingly hypocritical statement. This statement was made by a woman who also said, Palestinians? There are no Palestinians. I am a Palestinian. If you don't want to kill Palestinians, if that's what pains you so much, you don't have to kill them. You can give them their rights, and you can end the occupation. And to put the blame for the occupation and for the killing of innocents that we are seeing in Gaza now on the Palestinians, why? Because they want a state of their own. They want what Jews wanted and achieved. I find that, to put it mildly, less than admirable. There is something deeply hypocritical about that original statement about repeating it on the air over here as a great moral insult.
Henry Seidman, president of the U.S. Middle East Project, former head of the American Jewish Congress and the Synagogue Council of America. He recently wrote a piece for Politico headlined, Israel Provoked This War, It's Up to President Obama to Stop It. You can go to our website at democracynow.org if you'd like to get a copy of the full DVD interview with Henry Seidman. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Maté, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Robbie Cameron, Aaron, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Daniel Begun, Anna Uzbek, and Messiah Rhodes, and Sam Adele. Mike DeFilippo and Miguel Noguera are engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grand, Jessica Lee, John Wallach, and Vesta Godars. Our website is democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:02. Coming up next is more talk radio with guest host Lisa Loving. Today's topic is debt. Ew.
So come with me, we'll go and see the big Rock Candy Mountain. In the big Rock Candy Mountain.
Tune in to K-Boom Monday, September 8th for a special live broadcast from the Steam Radio Syndicate. Broadcasting from the tugboat north of the St. John's Bridge, the Steam Radio Syndicate has put together another great hour of storytelling, with musicians, authors, and poets creating songs and stories inspired by the old American folk song, Big Rock Candy Mountain. That's the Steam Radio Syndicate broadcasting live on Monday, September 8th from 7 to 8 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Two Rivers, One City, Tuesday, September 9th, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Charles Jordan Community Center in Portland. The Willamette and the Columbia Rivers provide sustenance, recreation, and economic benefits to our region. Yet these rivers are burdened with the legacy of industrial pollution and threatened with the future of toxic contamination. The Two Rivers, One City event will bring a broad network of river users together to share their stake in clean water. The event will include an overview of the various environmental justice issues related to the Portland Harbor Superfund cleanup and the oil-by-rail projects along the Columbia. Again, that's Two Rivers, One City, Tuesday, September 9th at the Charles Jordan Community Center, 9009 North Foss Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You are listening. I already said that. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Northwest Connector, connecting riders to the Oregon coast through daily round-trip bus routes from Portland, Salem, and Corvallis. Northwest Connector buses are equipped with bike racks and offer 3 and 7 day passes with transfers up and down the coast. Schedules and trip planner at northwestconnector.net.
It's 8:05 a.m. and you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is a Labor Day special. Sitting in for Cecil Prescott and Celeste Carey, I am Lisa Loving. We are looking at jobs, your job, and debt. Later this morning, we're going to have much programming about the labor movement, which is all part of this as well. But what we're specifically looking at, the 15th annual Job Gap Report by the Alliance for a Just Society, shows that a $15 minimum wage is not enough to keep the average worker out of poverty. So in honor of Labor Day, we're asking, what is your job? How much are you earning? And how much money do you need right now to get out of debt? And our guest today is you, listeners. So we would especially love to hear from students and educators. Usually you all are busy at this hour, but it's Labor Day. I'm off today. Are you off today? I'm off today. This is what I do when I'm off. Lisa Loving, KBOO, what is your job? How much are you earning? And how much money do you need right now to get out of debt? 503-231-8187 is the number to call. I was rolling through town to get here early this morning, and there was nobody out on the street. So I'm guessing there's a lot of people in bed right now, probably trying to pretend that they don't have a debt. But anyway, I wanted to touch base with a few things that I've been reading this morning about jobs and debt. But first of all, I want to go to, it's the 15th annual Job Gap Report. This is one of the more interesting things that I've read about the economy lately, right? While the campaign for a $15 minimum wage takes root across the country, right? New report is underscoring just how meager that wage really is for families. And basically, the Alliance for a Just Society found that in Washington State, the living wage for a single individual is now $15.99 an hour, while in Oregon, they're saying $15.96 per hour. A single adult with two children in Oregon needs $30.75 an hour to stay out of poverty. In Oregon, it's $30.01. And what our pals in Seattle with the Alliance for a Just Society say, Kathy Milady, she's the spokesperson up there. She says that the most important thing about it is that this is a wage where people are not in debt, but that they actually thrive, because that's what we really want to see. We want to see people who don't have to rely on social services. We want to see freestanding working families, right? But one of the most important aspects of what makes a living wage is everything else we have to pay for. So the Alliance for a Just Society is saying that it's personal debt. Personal debt is totally messing people up. The debt is what's making it so that that $15 an hour wage doesn't work so well. The cost of living, overall, part of the cost of living. So let's check this out. So students in Washington State, according to the Alliance, graduate with an average of $23,293 in student loans. The average credit card holder in Washington State owes about $5,269, and about 20% of mortgages in the state are underwater. It's Labor Day, people. We don't have a guest. You are the guest. So we're talking about the cost of living, how much we're paid in our jobs, and how much do you need to get out of debt? And that number to call is 503-231-8187. The Oregon numbers are really similar to the Washington statistics on the debt piece, with average student debt at about $26,600, credit card debt at $4,700, and same with the underwater mortgage rate. It's about 20%. Your mortgage is underwater if you owe basically more money than you paid for, than the house is worth, actually. So that's what we're looking at. So listeners, 503-231-8187. I was reading the Oregonian's Labor Day editorial this morning, okay? And this goes to exactly what I'm hoping people will call that we can talk about. People, wake up and give us a call. Participate in this discussion. Labor Day speeches should focus on middle class opportunity, right? So in today's Oregonian editorial, because it's Labor Day weekend, right? This is the day, by the way, that the AFL-CIO has a just gigantic event at Oaks Park, and you really should consider going, by the way. I'm not the queen of always taking sides on every discussion, but the Labor Day picnic at Oaks Park is charming. You don't have to pay anything to go. And the AFL-CIO, there's all kinds of people there. We can talk about that a little bit later, the 2014 Labor Day picnic. In fact, at the Northwest Labor Press and at OregonAFLCIO.org, there's all of the charming Labor Day cookouts all over Oregon, and they are all over the place. And I just think it's wonderful and charming. Anyway, but I just want to go to this Oregonian Labor Day editorial. They're basically saying, they're calling out Governor Kitzhaber. It is Labor Day weekend. It's an election year, so expect to hear pronouncements about the value of laborers and importance of shoring up the middle class. There's a big problem with these speeches, though. It's often hard to know who the candidates are talking about. This is the Oregonian's editorial. Actually, I guess it came out late last night. Labor Day started as a celebration of union labor, of course, evolved into a day recognizing the working class in general, and now is more or less treated as a celebration of everyone who has a job. Possibly misleading there, except, of course, the 1%. No one celebrates them today. This editorial by the Oregonian is very much about the 1% and how the 1%. Basically, in this editorial, the Oregonian is citing research that shows that more and more people with union jobs do not consider themselves to be middle class. More and more people in America in general do not consider themselves to be middle class. And this editorial is basically saying they just need to rethink that, basically. And it's actually asking for, how do we define middle class? Certainly, it's time to come up with a better vocabulary for class in America, one that goes beyond labeling everyone except the really poor and the really rich as middle class. Anyway, I'd love to hear what people have to say about this editorial as well. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. We do have a couple callers. We have Joanne on the phone. Joanne, what's on your mind today?
Lisa, I know you and others will not value, appreciate what I'm going to say. But with all that's wrong, new and old in this country and in the world, people today on Labor Day, people today in 2014 should not be celebrating Labor Day. They should be out on the streets all over the U.S. Marching and rallying for better jobs and for jobs. Thank you, Lisa.
Right on. Joanne. So Joanne is ringing a bell that a really fascinating commentator on the New York Times put out there today. Do we have another caller? We have Malia on the phone. Let's grab Malia and then dig into the point that Joanne just made. Is this a holiday to celebrate, or is this a holiday to bang some pots and pans? Malia, what's on your mind today?
Hi. I like the last caller. I'm outraged at America today. I was born in 52, grew up in what my son, who's in his 20s, tells me, lived in a bubble, actually believing that the American society cared about us. I remember how the CCC was created, and there was so much effort put into employing people and giving people self-esteem and everything. I'm 62 years old. I live in Lake Oswego. I used to be middle class. I am now impoverished. I've been working 7 days a week for 6.5 years, and I can barely keep things together. And what happened for me was I had a son who had a medical condition that was life-threatening, and he had very poor insurance. And in the aftermath of what it cost in the last 6 years, I could have bought a new home in Lake Oswego, and I'm just struggling to get by. And I feel very isolated. This show is very validating because I feel a lot of this is just happening to me. And it's very, very validating. And I just wanted to cite one last thing, is that in yesterday's Oregonian, they were talking about how the average American works about 50 hours a week. I forget the exact percent it noted, but many work 60-plus a week, as do I. And I do hospice for a living, and it pays very, very poorly. In fact, this industry has no guidelines on pay. They could pay you $2 an hour, 50 cents an hour, or I'm very fortunate to get paid more than that. But this should not be happening. I lost all my money to doctors who, my son was in and out of rooms in 10 minutes. The aftermath was $200 a pop, and he had to get seen so quickly that they didn't even have a grip what was really wrong with him. And all that money's lost with no proper diagnosis, and, you know, it's just my tough luck. And so I have a bitter taste in my mouth about the whole thing today, mm-hmm. Labor Day.
Malia, how's your son now?
How old is he?
How is he? How's his health?
He is not well.
Okay.
He is not well. They cannot find a diagnosis for him. And he's Eagle Scout, EMT, backwards medic. He wants to have a master's in nursing, and he suffers tremendously in the aftermath of some surgery from anxiety and depression. And all we do is get a new piece of paper for new drugs every 10 minutes. I'm thinking they're missing the boat, but the doctor's appointments don't designate enough time to explore.
Mm.
They depend on chemicals.
To some degree. So, Malia, thank you so much for calling. Malia flagged a couple of the issues that we need to be talking about right now. And by the way, it is Labor Day. And so what Joanne and Malia are saying is that people should be marching in the street on this day. And I will say that the AFL-CIO is getting together with people in Astoria, in Bend, in Eugene, Springfield, Medford, North Bend, Coos Bay, Portland, and Salem, getting people together. They are having food, music, and speakers wherever they go. It's not exactly the same as pounding pots and pans, but you can go down to Oaks Park right now. And, well, actually, it's a little bit later today. Actually, it started at 8:30. And check those people out at Oaks Park. This is a Labor Day special. I'm Lisa Loving. I'm sitting in for Cecil Prescott and Celeste Carey this morning. We are looking at jobs, your job, and debt, and the 15th annual job gap report by the Alliance for a Just Society. Listeners, we don't have a guest today. The guest is you. So what is your job? How much are you earning? And how much money do you need right now to get out of debt, listeners? That's what we're looking at, especially hoping that educators will call, because we never get to hear from you. And here it is, a holiday. Maybe you've got the morning off and you can call teachers and education students and students, especially college students, can call. What are you looking at? 503-231-8187. And, you know, so Joanne brought this up about the people shouldn't be celebrating Labor Day. They should be marching. And so the New York Times actually had their editorial, unlike the Oregonian's editorial, was wages and salaries still lag as corporate profits surge. This is today's New York Times editorial. By the way, 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Participate in this conversation. Don't wait till the end of the hour because we don't have a guest. The guest is you. So for the Oregonian's Labor Day editorial says, you know, people should just pretend like they're in the working class and therefore there will be a working class again, right? The New York Times editorial says, in the months before Labor Day last year, job growth was so slow that economists said it would take until 2021 to replace the jobs that were lost or never created in the recession and its aftermath. The pace has picked up since then. At the current rate, missing jobs will be recovered by 2018. Still, 5 years into an economic recovery that has been notable for resurging corporate profits, the number and quality of jobs are still lagging badly, as are wages and salaries. That is the Oregonian's editorial today, and I'd really like to hear from people. Look, we don't have a guest. This is my day off from work as well. I'm sitting in here with you, and I'd love to hear from you about what are you looking at in terms of labor, employment, and debt. 503-231-8187. Gulp some caffeine and pick up that phone, especially if you're a student or if you're an educator. Because what really resonated with me, what Malia said was, now I'm going to talk about my family. I'm sure my daughter will not appreciate this if it gets back to her. My daughter is a college student at Western Washington University in Bellingham. I have issues with that school. I don't think it's a very well-run school. But it's where why do our young people end up with these $30,000 debts? I know that I just read the statistics from the Job Gap report, but I don't know anyone whose debt is as low as $23,000. Although I did recently meet someone who's a PCC student who owes $26,000. She's a community college student that owes $26,000. And there's issues there. But my daughter, she's the smartest person in the family, but she's never really had a big sense of what she wanted to do, unlike my son. He's just like me. I always knew what I wanted to do. Wasn't necessarily a victory, though, for myself personally. What I always wanted to do was be a journalist, a newspaper reporter, and what the heck is happening to that industry? We could talk about it a little bit. In some cases, as we're looking at this debt, we're looking at these jobs, we're looking at industries that have turned on their heads, and things that we thought were secure that are absolutely unstable platforms. But anyway, so Malia talked about anxiety and depression. My daughter and her friends, they don't even talk about what their job prospects are. And my daughter's a senior, like I said, university up there in Bellingham. She told me recently she doesn't even ask her friends at college what they want to do or what their job prospects are or what they're doing for a job because they're all literally filled with anxiety and depression just thinking about it. And I could be mistaken, but my daughter and her very dearest friends, they have a deep sense that there's no way or that they're ever going to get a job in whatever is the area that they're studying, right? And that's thank you to the university also, by the way. I see where, speaking as a journalist, and all of these newspapers that are shutting down, and every time we see a news outlet that shuts down and then reconstitutes as digital only, they always shed reporters. Always. There's never been a better time to be a crook in the state of Oregon, potentially nationwide. But what we're seeing is they just shed jobs. There's fewer and fewer. And so anxiety and depression are the words to describe my daughter and her friends' job prospects and what they're looking at. So my daughter, basically a couple weeks ago, she said to me, she's thinking about a career in the grocery store. Okay. I was working at the Hollywood Fred Meyer before I got my theoretically career job back. I have to say the job in the grocery store is pretty good. Many of the grocery store jobs are union jobs. So then we come back to the Labor Day thing. So my daughter's trying to figure out what she wants to do, you know, as a person who's going to be spat out onto the sidewalk with a $30,000 debt. Seriously? Right? And a psychology degree. And if you have a psychology degree, you need to get a master's degree. It's kind of like if you want to teach kindergartners anymore, you have to get a master's degree. And then you end up with a debt that's more like $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. And then you're teaching kindergartners. Anyway, I'm ranting a little bit, but this is Labor Day. It's we're having a Labor Radio special here. And I can see that our pals with the Old Mole Variety Hour are in the building, our wonderful dear pals over there. They're going to have a whole lineup of programming about the labor movement. And let's go to the phone lines. Who we have on the phones? We've got John on the phone. John, what's going on? This subject really stresses me out a lot.
Well, it's going to get worse.
Okay.
Congress is nothing, has become nothing but concubines for corporations and the 0.1%.
Yeah.
And what's even going to get, what I'm saying was worse, wait until the TPP kicks in. And
the
now
TPP,
there's a transatlantic.
The Trans-Pacific Pipeline.
Oh, no, partnership.
Oh, God. Okay.
You have everything from Malaysia clear up to Korea to Japan, and it's going to wipe us up.
It's like that thing Clinton did with the trade agreement. Yeah.
No, but see, this is even worse. But what gets me, it's the same thing with the transatlantic. They, meaning the people who are writing this up, industrialists, they won't even let Congress read it.
I feel so. I saw something about
that. DeFazio tried to read some of it, and they chased him out of the room.
Everybody, we need to be checking that out because, I mean, sometimes we sit in our homes, we're watching the news or we're watching the news on our smartphones or whatever, and we see these policy things just gallop past us, and these are the nuts that really trip us up.
Well, when I got a little bit of understanding of this, I was watching a foreign TV station, that this is not just industrial what do you call it, property that's involved, but intellectual. And if, like, Korea wants a chicken farm or some kind of more land or whatever, they can actually come over here and buy it. I mean, you know, I remember when I was a kid. I grew up in Eastern Oregon. And, I mean, we're talking about redneck, all right? And they had, you know, these homemade and also whatever, billboards saying, get us out of the United Nations.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
The part of that was like, oh, we're signing contracts and treaties that they'll come and get us. There'll be a Bolshevik behind every bush, you know? Well, this one, this one's like 20 times worse.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's like people, it's like a gathering storm. I don't even know what really is going to happen. When it happens, there goes the farm. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. And if you talk about labor, I mean, I don't know, but I have this sinking feeling that, you know, like that Jim Morrison show, you know, the future's uncertain and the end is always near.
No, all right.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, I'm just saying that this is icing on the cake.
I hear you, John.
Okay, well, sorry.
John, thanks a lot for calling. I want to say this about John. He was just talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. I just ran that through a search engine, wikileaks.org/TPP. You should check that out. I'm sorry about that, Joanne. I just did exactly what really bugs her a lot. So, Joanne, I'm going to take a second and read this. Maybe, Joanne, if we all get together with our digitally connected friends and our analog friends, maybe we can form a complete circle so that everybody can have an uninterrupted information flow. Although, Joanne, I do agree with you. What's going to happen when the big earthquake comes and we don't have electricity? Then we can't read all this stuff. But anyway, WikiLeaks released the secret negotiated draft text for the entire Trans-Pacific Partnership Intellectual Property Rights Chapter. This is what I was thinking that I had seen before. It's super fascinating. Anyway, just want to encourage people to check that out. This is Monday Talk Radio. It is Labor Day, a Labor Day special. Sitting in for Cecil Prescott and Celeste Carey, I'm Lisa Loving. We're looking at the 15th annual Job Gap Report by the Alliance for a Just Society. Listeners, we're asking you, how much do you make? What's going on with your job? Are you in debt? How much money do you need right now to get out of debt? 503-231-8187. Really want to hear from educators. We never get to hear from you because you work so hard. Is it true? Yes, it's true. And we do have another caller. Is it John? Sean, what's going on?
Good morning, Lisa. Hey, thanks to KBOO, occasionally I'm able to listen to economist Richard Wolff, and I thought he made a great point one time. He said, the situation in the United States is this. We don't need Americans anymore to be workers, and we don't need them as customers. So what it boils down to basically is that the American people, we don't have any leverage anymore. If you take the populations of China, India, Indonesia, if just a tiny percentage of those people can buy consumer products, then American corporations can sell to them. You know, so like if Americans don't have any buying power anymore, it's totally irrelevant because corporate profits will still be wonderful. So they don't need us as workers. They don't need us as consumers. Yeah. We're basically a superfluous population of useless eaters at this point. And the most that the left can seem to come up with are these kind of harebrained schemes about cooperatives and things like that. It's like, if you know, in my opinion, I think we should use the French as our model. Like, you know, they don't just march in the streets. You know, they go, they have general strikes. And then when they do go on general strike,
they shut the whole nation down.
That's right.
It's pretty amazing.
They take to the railroads. They take to the airport runways. They take to the interstates. They park heavy equipment on all that stuff. They shut the entire country down.
I was once caught on a French interstate during a trucker strike, and I hear exactly what you're saying. Sean, let me ask you this, though. So sometimes I wish I'd studied economics when I was in college, but I know for a fact that when I was in college, the economics that were taught at the University of Oregon were sort of, they were conservative economics. So you're bringing up Richard D. Wolff for just, you know, because you brought it up, you know, and this is not, I'm not even going to describe this as alternative economics. It's like how to understand how the system really works. Who are some other authors that you would recommend that our listeners should look for in terms of looking at a different way of how the economy should or should not work?
The first thing I would recommend to everybody is just go out and buy every book that Michael Parenti ever wrote. Just the basics of class warfare, of Marxist analysis, you know, like Michael Parenti, you know, buy everything the man ever wrote, because this is basically class war that's been decades in the making. It's been just relentless. The WTO that you mentioned in Seattle, in a way that was kind of like the last nail in the coffin, but now our backs are up against the wall. Marxist-Leninism seems to offer the only possible response to this vicious class war.
All right, Sean, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
This is Talk Radio. It's Labor Day. We're talking about jobs, the economy, your job, and debt. You know, and we do have a couple callers, but I want to say this really quickly. Steve, our magical engineering pixie, and Koosh, the studio dog, they had this fascinating idea that we were chatting about before the show. And Steve was saying people don't count rent as debt. And yet it's essentially a contracted part of your standard of living. Fascinating. And I know that the job gap report, the real takeaway of that report is that raising the minimum wage for people at the bottom is having an impact on especially some of the poorest families.
I'm not in debt. I don't own a credit card. If I can't pay cash for it, that simply means that I don't need it. Our house is paid for. So as far as debtedness is concerned, I'm not really interested in buying some capitalist paradigm who would love to suck the life out of me. I never fell for the great American dream bullshit story. As far as the Trans-Pacific Partnership is concerned, I have a little information.
Okay.
Lisa, it's called the Alliance for Democracy, www.afd.pdx.org, phone number 503-222-5495.
All right.
Get involved.
Okay. All right, LJ. Thanks a lot for calling.
Take care. Have a good day.
You too. You know, sometimes as LJ was talking about, LJ's coming from like the baby boom generation. I feel as though we're seeing that the younger generation of workers is not getting the same deals that the older generation got. And so the older generation, and I'm at the end of that older generation. When I was a teenager, you could go to the community colleges for free. I grew up in California. You could go there for free. And by the time I finished college, the cost of a college education had gone up by at least a factor of 10. But now I'm sure it's gone up way more than that. And so I do think that, as the Oregonian's editorial is saying this morning, we should look more at class. Sometimes I feel as though when it comes to debt, jobs, employment, and the economy, we could also be looking at generations, like what is happening with the younger generation, as I said earlier. And Malia called and talked about the debt that her family got into because of a medical problem and the way the medical system worked, right? The way it worked, question mark. I feel so I'm seeing a lot of young people, especially people who are in college, who are just feeling depressed and hopeless about what their future involves. I'm also seeing older people who are sort of locked out of the economy, who are sort of biting down and going and getting master's degrees and showing up with these gigantic debts that they just shrug and say, they're never going to be able to make me pay that, which fascinates me as well. So this is Talk Radio. We're talking about jobs, your job. What is your debt? How is that working out for you? 503-231-8187. We have Steve on the phone. We lost Steve. Steve, call back, okay? We have George on the phone. George, what's going on with you?
Hey. Hi, Lisa. As you know, I'm George, and I grew up in a different America. I am 78 years old, and when I went to college, University of Oregon, my tuition was $78 a term. And when I graduated in the year 61, it's gone up to $110 a term. And I also had the GI Bill. It was just a whole very, very different environment. And therefore, I am retired and recently well off because I got a pension where I worked, I've got Social Security, and I've got a pretty good nest egg saved up. So the fact that I was able to put both of my daughters through the University of Oregon, and they both graduated, you know, debt-free. And my youngest, who is 27, got her master's degree at Lewis and Clark, and finally, after a couple years, got a job. Her master's degree is in counseling from K to 12, and she got sort of a part-time job at a very good high school in Beaverton, and I think it's Westview. And she's just, I mean, last week was her first week.
Okay.
And her job is just part-time.
Yeah, I hear you.
Actually, it's full-time, but it is, I mean.
But it pays part-time. It's theoretically part-time. I hear you completely, George.
Yeah.
We see this so much. George, thank you so much for calling. You know, I have a relative who was talking to my son about, like, well, this relative was able to go to college to work through the summer to earn his college degree. So he paid for the whole thing. He didn't understand, this relative, that he was sort of describing a situation that my son would love to be in. And so my son had to look at this relative and say, hey, so do you know of any college, of any summer job where I could make $40,000 a year? Because that's what I'd have to make. And that relative doesn't even bring this up anymore. So this is KBOO Portland. This is Talk Radio. It's Labor Day special. I'm Lisa Loving, sitting in for Cecil and Celeste. We're looking at jobs, your job, and debt. We have a couple people on the phone. The number is 503-231-8187. Before we go to Steve, we got Steve. Yay, Steve! Before we go to Steve, I do want to say that LJ had called. He doesn't own a credit card. The house is paid for, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. George, too, I think, probably, he's going to say, you know, his house is probably paid for. He's got a good nest egg. Now, I have to roll this out to you. You're still paying thousands of dollars in debt every year because of your property taxes that you pay to the county. Our wonderful pal from the Old Mole Variety Hour ran this note in. He pays thousands in rent to the county, even if his house is free and clear. Taxes are debt. And the thing that gets me about that is those taxes are going up all the time. Now, I'm a homeowner as well, and incredibly privileged to be in that position. Incredibly privileged to be in that position. And we paid this. I was so annoyed when I got our property taxes this past spring. We pay $500 from our about $5,000 in property taxes a year. And it's always going up because of the ballot initiatives, the bond measures, and everything that people have to pass at the city and county level because of all the programs that have been defunded. So people are looking for ways to pay, say, for example, Metro looked for ways to pay for a new elephant enclosure at the zoo, so they passed a gigantic bond measure, and then they essentially changed their plans, and they're doing something other than what they said. Portland Public Schools, a lot of our taxes go to Portland Public Schools in one way or another. I'm not going to quibble about that at all. They actually passed a bond measure that they're using that money to make it so that the schools won't all collapse if there's an earthquake, and they are doing that too. I've checked up on it. But anyway, the point is, $5,000, my property taxes, $500 of that property tax went to the straight to the police and fire disability and retirement fund. $500. It was one of the biggest chunks. How much money in my taxes went to child hunger? $7. Anyway, now I've had too much coffee. We've got a full line of callers. Let's just go to the phone lines. Steve, what's going on? Thanks for coming back.
Hey, thanks, Lisa. You got great energy. I love it.
Coffee.
I'm calling because I'm self-employed, and I'm not taking today off because I don't, you know, work full-time, but I'm a self-employed gardener. And I'm calling to talk about, you know, people are they always talk about the minimum wage and a living wage. I'm talking about, let's put a maximum wage. I propose if an individual makes over $500,000 or $2 million a year, that they pay 110% taxes, because it's like if you have a minimum wage, you should have a maximum wage. So thanks for your good show, and I'll let some other callers, and I'll listen off the air.
Thanks a lot.
So have a good day.
Steve rocks. That's cracking me up because, okay, Goodwill, right? Goodwill Industries of Oregon, right? There's a state legislator out of Corvallis, and I'm trying to grab her name. She made an issue over this past year of how little Goodwill Industry pays their alter-abled employees that are in work programs, right? Some of these people, disabled workers, are paid as little as $2 an hour, okay? What is her name? I can't think of her name. Now, check this out. The reason why that's such a big deal is the Goodwill CEO. The guy's name is Michael Miller. He's the highest nonprofit CEO salary guy in the state. In fact, the CEO of Oregon Goodwill of Oregon, makes so much money that in 2004, the State Department of Justice investigated his compensation package and forced Goodwill to basically cut his pay 24%. That was, 10 years ago. And at the time, he made $861,000. CEO of Goodwill in Oregon makes almost $1 million a year. Meanwhile, they're paying some of their disabled workers $2 an hour. The state has tried to intervene and force Goodwill to pay him less money, but they keep the most recent article here in the Portland Business Journal, which is a really great news source. You should check it out, seriously, the Portland Business Journal. So their November article from last year is just looking at how his salary's back up again, and they're saying it's because revenue is up so high. Goodwill of Oregon says that its revenue is so high. The interesting thing about this is that nationally, the second highest guy that runs a Goodwill is this guy's brother, and he's in the Midwest or something like that. I just find that fascinating, Goodwill. So this is Talk Radio. We're talking about Labor Day. Let's go back to the phone lines. We have Linda on the phone. Linda, what's on your mind today?
Hi. I am that story about the two Goodwill brothers, while the family business, who knew that nonprofits would turn into, and I don't think most are, to be quite honest, not local small ones anyway.
No, that guy makes almost twice as much as number two. He makes almost twice as much as the second most highest paid, and the second most highest paid is usually Steve Bassett, work in public broadcasting, who makes like $300,000. Anyway, that's fascinating. To me, I'm fascinated by that. Keep going, yeah, though. I talk too fast.
But I was calling in to talk more about this whole issue of a living wage, and also just about the circumstances of people like me. Like, I'm officially retired. I'm past the, I've gone on to Social Security, and I'm living off the proceeds of my ex-husband's job, what we put away for in IRAs during our long or very long marriage, and the sale of our house. And I find that the cost of living in Portland has become so high, and the cost of living when you have to pay for medical care. So I'm on Medicare. In order to cover all my costs, I have to buy these supplemental policies. I pay over $350 a month for the policies to keep my medical care.
And it can go up at any time.
Pay for my drugs and stuff like that. And it doesn't even cover, of course, anything like supplements that you use, like fish oil for bad joints. If I stop my fish oil, my
joints are
really wacky. And so I can have supplements of over 150 a month that I feel are fairly essential to me, and I try to get at the best price. So I find that living, I might get pushed out of Portland, but more even my children. I have two children living in under 300 square feet each. They have these little studios, and it's not that I'm saying they're over there whining, but they're very tiny, very hot, and that's all they can afford, both working here in the city. And, we are definitely not offering our children what we even had the opportunity, and I'm really, it just is incredible. And college is out of the question unless you have someone to pay for it or you're willing to do the kind of debt that you're saying. And none of my children are willing to take on that kind of debt. Mm-hmm. Luckily, we got the two older ones their basic education when we were still making money at a higher level. But, even for people who made money at a very high, relatively high level to everyone else, are not doing well in this current economy. And I think we all have to really say it's much worse than we generally talk about.
I think it is too. And Linda, so I think you're coming from the same generation that I have. I feel as though something fundamentally changed there. So as we're seeing, and we had the Occupy movement did school a lot of people in this country, just straight up schooled people about the economics of what is and is not working. But it just strikes me that the rich are so fabulously rich and the poor are just so staggeringly invisible. And in my area of employment is newspapers, right? And everybody's watching the Oregonian. We've all lined up for years. We could criticize the Oregonian, even though they've always had some fabulous reporters. They did amazing things that we did not really appreciate so much until they stopped being a daily.
I appreciate a lot of that. I didn't like their right wing, but I had read them since I was 5 years old.
Right.
Very much mind the passing, though I had stopped subscribing because $33 a month for a ton of paper you put
really expensive.
Is really hard to do.
And the thing is, Linda, so the Oregonian is owned by Advance Publications, right? Advance Publications owns a chain of newspapers all over the world. And who owns Advance Publications? These billionaires do. Mm-hmm. Billionaires own it, and they're looking around at the local communities and saying, oh no, those papers aren't making enough money, so we're gonna hobble you. We're gonna cut you so much that there is a headline that went on to the Oregonian earlier this weekend that showed a photo of an Amanita muscaria mushroom, which can cause hallucinations, a disorientation, and wild behavior, mistakenly appeared with a story about the opening of Matsutake mushroom season on page 7 Sunday. And I mean, I'm looking at you and saying, like, so a billionaire owns that. He's saying it doesn't make enough money because he's not getting his billions. It's two brothers, right? But they're making money. And so they're taking the editors away. They've stripped the editors away. Now they're content providers or whatever. And so they're showing a poisonous mushroom in an article about going and home picking mushrooms. Do you understand what I'm saying? So
yeah,
something fundamentally
exactly
changed.
They don't really care about the quality of what gets out there to
the
it.
The owners don't. I'm going to
exactly.
say the owners
not
don't.
Not that the journalists necessarily. I agree with you. I think one of the things that we have to take on is, though, a way in which many of us who are either in the lower to the higher middle class, who are now being directly affected in very strong negative ways, or our children are, et cetera, by this economy, we have to, be willing to rip off our ownership in what was the middle class. Do you know what I'm saying? Because there's a way in which we still hold ourselves as having more money than we do, or having a future that has now gone down. I can't tell you how many men who I know who were, quote, successful, and I'm not talking bad men who are ripping off other people. I'm talking about people who worked hard in a field like electronics or something and managed to be successful and have now had it all turned to shit.
Yep.
They lost it in every one of those boom, bust, boom, bust, boom, bust. And yet there are young people coming into town here in Portland making $90,000 and $100,000 at software things. And so there's this odd walking aroundness of children of the fathers who've lost everything, hanging out with people who are making the new boom, and we're somehow not dealing with these real inequalities, and we don't have a picture in our you know, the picture in our mind is not the picture of an increasingly impoverished society.
And yet that's what's happening. Linda, thank you so much for calling.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. And this, it's Labor Day. This is a Labor Day talk radio special. Sitting in for Cecil Prescott and Celeste Carey, I'm Lisa Loving. We're looking at jobs, your job, the economy, and debt. Looking at the 15th annual job gap report by the Alliance for a Just Society, which shows a $15 minimum wage is not enough to keep the average worker out of poverty. And we're asking people, give us a call, 503-231-8187. What's your job? How is it working for you? Do you have a debt? And what about your kids? And we have Yanni on the phone. Is that right, Yanni?
No, you have Yanni on the phone, for
Yanni!
Heaven's sake.
Yanni!
Yeah, I know more Greek, but I can't play piano, and I'm cuter than Yanni now. But anyway.
Okay.
So I'm making $15 an hour, finally. And I declared bankruptcy, and it's still hard with all of that bankruptcy debt taken away to make it to the end of the month. You know, my one son who got a journalism degree in college is now going to be working for a $15,000 stipend in an AmeriCorps job back in New York City.
Oh,
now,
how's
he going
to
survive
that?
On that? You know? And I look at, you know, to pay rent, you have to at least think that it's $1,000, and property taxes up here on the house are at least $2,250 a month. And yeah. You can't do that on $15 an hour. It used to be, a long time ago, I heard on KBOO, Council on Prostitution Alternatives was saying that you needed at least $15 an hour to get women off the streets. Well, that was a decade ago. So now it must be 20 or 25, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't see how people are going to make it. And, you know, I think that everything, all the household, you know, the mortgages and everything and the credit cards, everybody should just be forgiven. You know, I couldn't have done it. I couldn't have gotten my kids out of high school without credit card debt. And I was unemployed for a bit. Basically 10 years.
You know what's so interesting about that, Yanni, when you say that, like, you know, how are they going to do it? You know, for us, this is the problem, but for the people that own the banks, it's their solution. You know what I'm saying? So for the people that are in D.C. and New York and maybe San Francisco, and they're in the financial district, they're like, look at the way I know they've got those student debts. They can't even declare bankruptcy and shake those off. It's like the federal government made a lot of money on student loans.
You know, the thing is that he said that if he does these AmeriCorps jobs for like 5 years, most of the debt gets forgiven.
You know what? Obama came up with a plan, and you have
to
enroll in it. Yeah.
You have to be an indentured servant for 5 years. But that doesn't get rid of the Sally Mae debt.
Right.
I
feel like it was a 10-year plan,
you know,
but yeah.
That's indentured. But anyway.
All right.
And probably the woman you're thinking about is Sarah Gelser.
It's true. It's Representative Sarah Gelser, the Democrat from Corvallis, that tried earlier this year to make an issue of how little, what little amount of money Oregon Goodwill pays its disabled workers on the line. And thank you a lot for calling, Yanni. She's putting it on the line
anyway,
there.
I mean, those people who talk about, I don't owe any money, and blah, blah, blah. About
they still
debt.
Have
well,
to pay
you know,
taxes,
like,
yeah.
You try raising three kids as a woman, in a woman's working job, you're not going to make it. So I don't want to hear it from those guys, frankly.
Thanks for calling, Yanni.
A bunch of crap.
Thanks for calling, Yanni. Hey, you know what? I need to step in right now and say that's the third caller today that used an obscenity. And if the audio sounds a little choppy, it's because we're having to dump y'all. Okay, so don't use sexual or excretory references, even though they might seem like a common thing that you hear all the time on the street. This is KBOO Community Radio. It's a Labor Day special. Sitting in for Cecil and Celeste, I'm Lisa Loving. We're looking at jobs, employment, debt. We've had a lot of people calling in, talking about what they're going through, what their kids are going through. You know, I have to say for the record that when I hear the people who are coming from the older generation talking about how they don't have debt and things that they tried, you know, the benefits that they got, I think that maybe charitably what they're trying to do is show the difference between now and then. Do you know what I'm saying? So I'm charitably going to say that. And we have a few minutes left of the show. What is your job? How's it going? How much is your debt? What can we possibly do to figure out how to pay these debts? 503-231-8187. And is it Gregory? Is that you,
yes,
sir? What's going on, man?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm not in the workforce anymore, but I'm a little frightened at the air of hypocrisy that I'm hearing on this program.
Okay.
For many
yourself
years,
yourself not having a job. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, people of people are complaining about the miseries that they've fallen into. But for many years, they've been supporting parties which are engaged in dismantling the New Deal.
Right on. Okay.
And what else do people expect from that?
Okay. Okay.
That seems like an unanswered question there. Thank you.
I will say this, Gregory, and thanks for calling, Gregory. Actually, what's called the Independent Party of Oregon is by far the fastest growing political party in Oregon. People are running away really fast from the Republicans, but pretty fast from the Democrats as well, and joining that Independent Party of Oregon. Although, when you look at the Working Families Party, you look at this Independent Party, it looks like the Independent Party had their nominating convention and mostly nominated Republicans, and it looks like the Working Family Party only glued itself onto Democrats. So it does come straight back to the same original question, you know, what happened to third parties, and why does everybody put their support into the basket of the Republicans or the Democrats? And that is actually on the ballot this year with the top two primary. We're not here to talk about that right now, but Gregory's basically flagging the political parties and saying, why support them? And do we have another caller? All right. We do not have another caller. This is Monday Talk Radio. I'm Lisa Loving. I'm sitting in for Cecil and Celeste. Okay. We are looking at the 15th annual job gap report by the Alliance for a Just Society, showing a $15 minimum wage, not enough to keep the average worker out of poverty. That New York Times editorial that I referred to a little while ago basically said that the 13 states that did enact a higher minimum wage this year actually did have a positive impact on the economies of a fraction of the lowest income workers in the United States, which I think is important to know. I also want to say, coming up this morning at 9 at the Old Mole Variety Hour, do we love them? Yes, we do. Nathan Schneider asks, who stole the 4-hour workday? Norm Diamond, woot, talks about the meaning of Labor Day. Kathy Weeks talks about utopianism, plus political commentary from the late Robin Williams. I know people are going to want to sit in for that. At 10, Air Cascadia is off, so there's going to be a 15-minute excerpt from Dennis Bernstein's show Flashpoints about the disabled nuclear plant at Fukushima and a lawsuit against TEPCO, the company that owns it. At 10:15, Barbara Bernstein is on with Michelle Nyehouse about can coal ever be clean? And there's more coming up on the Morning Radio Zine. You know, we are starting to run out of show. And before we go, I don't want people to feel too hopeless. Pacific Northwest People's Movement Assembly is coming up at the end of this month, September 26th, at the First Unitarian Church. And it's a social forum, not a conference, a convergence of people's movements whose primary work and struggles take place in the Pacific Northwest. These people are coming together, benefit concert with Mike Crenshaw and friends. It looks like it's an international movement, and people need to check that out. Anyway, pnwsf.org. I think we're running out of the show. Is that accurate? Yes. So I'm just going to go ahead and say that is it for this show. More on the Job Gaps report at thejobgap.org. Special thanks to engineer Steve Nasser and Koosh, the studio dog. The show is going to be podcast on KBOO.FM by the end of today. Grab that link and share it with your friends and family. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for the Old Mole Variety Hour.
KBOO Community Radio and Sante Aesthetics and Wellness are proud to co-sponsor A Touch of Portland 2014. The event takes place Sunday, September 7th, and is a great way to detox after a long summer. Whether you're getting back from Labor Day weekend or decompressing from the burn, this is a great way to stay healthy through dance, foods, and multiple healing modalities. That's A Touch of Portland, Sunday, September 7th at Northwest 17th and Davis. Go to kboo.fm/touchofportland for more information on this event. KBOO Community Radio and Sante Aesthetics and Wellness are proud to co-sponsor A Touch of Portland 2014. The event takes place Sunday, September 7th, and is a great way to detox after a long summer. Whether you're getting back from Labor Day weekend or decompressing from the burn, this is a great way to stay healthy through dance, foods, and multiple healing modalities. That's A Touch of Portland, Sunday, September 7th at Northwest 17th and Davis. Go to kboo.fm/touchofportland for more information on this event.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Enemigo Imperialismo, Enemy Imperialism, a bilingual community art exhibit that explores the dimensions of imperialism in the world today. The opening of this art show will be Friday, September 5th at 6 p.m. at the Independent Publishing Resource Center, 1001 Southeast Division Street in Portland. Artists around the world have responded to violence with work that questions the legitimacy of the state and empire. Enemigo Imperialismo points to one of our common targets in the fight for global justice and invites us to reflect on power, resistance, and self-determination. Again, that's Enemigo Imperialismo. The opening of this art show will be Friday, September 5th at 6 p.m. at the Independent Publishing Resource Center, 1001 Southeast Division Street in Portland. The show will be up until September 25th. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Wish I was a mole in the ground. Wish I was a mole in the ground. 'Cause if I